I'm in love with you.
This is Corey from Bible Baptist Church in West Union, Ohio. You're listening to Here's Hope with Pastor Tim Carter. Let's listen to the message.
Last Sunday morning, if you were here, we had a message on the topic and the issue of John the Baptist, really, the messenger that was going to come. But laying the groundwork for John the Baptist to really understand the importance of John the Baptist and Jesus coming on the scene, it helps to understand a little bit about the day, about 400 years before Jesus Christ came on the scene. About 400 years prior to the start of the New Testament, as we have it broken up for us, it was a mess. Service to God was a train wreck in a lot of different ways. It wasn't that there weren't any believers. There were still believers there. There's always a remnant. Don't ever let yourself think that God leaves himself without a remnant. If you think you're the last believer left serving God, you're mistaken. There's more, and there will be all the way up until the time of the end. So we just need to do a quick recap of what we talked about last week. There were 11 conditions of the day in the book of Malachi, which led into the Christ coming on the scene. The people had forgotten how much God loved them. As they said to the Lord, they asked him the question, wherein or in what have you loved us? We talked last week about how they dishonored God by not giving him their best. And the truth is, it still is a problem today if we don't give God our best. We don't give him our best. When you get to the third thing, the preachers have become hirelings. We have that a lot in our day. I pray God that I'm not one. That they do what they do for a paycheck, not because their heart is truly in it, but if they quit getting a paycheck, they would quit doing what they do. And it was a major problem in the day. The fourth issue they had was the people said serving God was a weariness. It's a lot, Lord. We see that a lot in our day. People having the attitude, even church-going people, that, man, you know, just so exhausting serving God. And I would just remind you, he is asking for one day a week. Now, he does want your whole life. But for all that God does for us, to set aside one day, and I think I'm preaching to the choir here, but to set aside one day a week to stop and to remember how good he has been to us, it's not a big deal. Well, the failures of the preachers had negatively affected the people. I would like to take a few minutes to look in chapter number 2 at this issue because it's significant. It's significant, and the wording is in regards to the Old Testament priesthood and the preachers, what I call preachers of their day. But when you get to chapter 2, verse number 5 of the book of Malachi, he said, my covenant was with him and the life. And he's speaking about Levi. That's in verse 4. You shall know that I have sent this commandment unto you, that my covenant might be with Levi, saith the Lord of hosts. Levi was that first one that God designated out, that this is going to be the priestly line. He says in verse number 5, my covenant was with him of life and peace. I gave them to him for fear wherewith he feared me. So we know that Levi was a man that feared the Lord, and not just Levi, but many that followed from his line that were in the service of Christ, or service of the Lord or Christ in the Old Testament. I gave them to him for fear wherewith he feared me, and he was afraid before my name. The law of truth was in Levi's mouth, and iniquity was not found in his lips. Levi walked with me in peace and equity, and he did turn many from iniquity. When preachers, when Sunday school teachers, junior church workers, when we're doing our job, delivering the truth of God, it turns many people away from their iniquity into following the Lord. It does make a difference. It does make a difference. When we're not what we ought to be, it makes a difference. In fact, in a bad way, as we find beginning in verse number 7, for the priest's lips, they should keep knowledge, and they should seek the law at his mouth, for he is the messenger of the Lord of hosts. But ye are departed out of the way, you priests, and you have caused many to stumble at the law. And when God's teachers, preachers are not doing their job, it affects other people. When we're doing it right, it turns many people from their iniquity to serving God. When we're not doing our job well, it causes many people to stumble at the law. You might say, well, I don't get that. I don't believe that. Ask you a simple question. What does it do when a preacher has an affair with a secretary in a church? I'd ask you this question. What does it do to people for a long time that used to go to church when you show up and you knock on their door and you invite them to church and you say, in fact, it happened to me this week. A family that came in to get gifts, and I began to talk to this family about, do they go to church? No, I haven't gone to church for several years. And Preacher Smith used to say, normally the first excuse people give you as to why they're not going to church is not the real reason. So I just kind of pressed on without trying to be annoying, but I know I'm annoying some, but because I can't help people if they give me a lame excuse. That's not the real thing. But when I got past that, he said, well, the preacher at the church I used to go to, and then he started in on his disappointment in the preacher. Had another guy a couple of groups before that. Hey, man, I used to go to church. Yeah, I used to go. You don't go now? Why don't you go? And he said, well, the preacher, he's a hypocrite. Now, I'm telling you this verse that when God's people are not what they ought to be, it causes people to stumble. And it's not just me. It's you and your family and in your neighborhood and at your workplace. Because what does the world say when they're giving us a list of excuses as to why they don't want to go to church? It's because if it's not the preacher, it's, well, I know a Christian that, and they're all a bunch of. And when God's people aren't, it's not just me. I wish you could just look at me and put all the blame on me, but you can't, and we can't, because it's us. Because in New Testament Christianity, we are a royal priesthood. And one of the very clear teachings as a Baptist church is we believe in the priesthood of all believers. Now, not that everybody is the bishop of a church, but you're just as much in the priesthood to bring forth sacrifices acceptable unto God as I am. I just have the burden, blessing mainly, sometimes burden, of being the bishop of this church. But in position, really, before God, we're all on level ground at the cross. And you could fill out a list of people at your workplace, in your neighborhood, that saw a Christian not being what they ought to be, and it caused people to stumble at God's program in the world. And this is God's accusation against the preachers of the day. Your failure to be what you ought to be is affecting people. God said, because of that, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to make you contemptible before the people. There used to be a day in America where the term Christian, I spoke about it last week, where a preacher was one of the most honorable, respected positions in our country. It's not today. Too many scandals, too many times they've heard in the news about, and money in the walls. And it's not just preachers. It used to be a day that Christian in America was honorable. But after all the well, God talked about the rampant mistreatment of believers to each other. When you get to chapter number 2, he talks about adultery had become commonplace. Shouldn't be, but it had. When you get to chapter 3, at the end of chapter 2, actually, he talked about two things that people were saying that he was tired of hearing. One, that people who do evil are good. And listen, wrong is still wrong, even if everybody is doing it. And right is still right, even if nobody is doing it. And one thing that we don't want to be guilty of as God's people is redefining the terms like the world. We expect it out of the world, for the world to call evil good. But out of God's people, God said, you better call it what it is. The other thing God said he was tired of is hearing people ask, where's the God of judgment? as if God wasn't going to do something about it, or as if God couldn't do something about it. When you get toward the end of the book, in chapter 3, they were robbing God, which was bringing about curses upon them as individuals and as a nation, and it will still. When you get to the very last thing that God points out that he was really disgusted by, he said, the people say it is vain to serve the Lord. It's of no value to serve the Lord. Now that's pitiful when God's people are saying, what does it matter if we live for God? Why have we walked mournfully before the Lord of hosts? They said, the proud people, they're excelling. The wicked people are doing well. Why does it matter if we live for God? If living for God doesn't really make a difference, then why do we live for God? But the truth is, it does make a difference. It really does. And so when you get to Malachi chapter number 3, verse number 1, that's where we picked it up last week, just in a part of a verse when he said, behold, I will send my messenger, and he shall prepare the way before me. The message last week was about God bringing John the Baptist into the world, and spent most of the message last week talking about John's impact in the world and God working through him, because he said, before the one that you really want, before the one you're asking me for comes, the messenger is going to come before him. The forerunner of the Christ is going to come. But the one that you really are wanting to see is also found in verse number 1. Behold, I will send my messenger, and he shall prepare the way before me. And, now look, there's a colon there, and he goes, and the Lord whom ye do, whom you seek, the Lord whom you seek, he shall suddenly come to his temple. See, because even 400 years before the Christ came, the people of God that would get together and talk in chapter number 3, that's in chapter 3, verse number 16, then they that feared the Lord, they spake often one to another, and the Lord hearkened and heard it. And God wrote a book of remembrance, was written before him for them that feared the Lord and that thought on his name. And God said, those people that thought on my name, and I this last week, they shall be mine, saith the Lord of hosts, in that day when I make up my jewels. I will spare them as a man spares his own son that serves him. And then shall ye return. And then he said, you're going to discern between the righteous and the wicked, between him that serves God and him that serves him not. You're going to get good discernment. But what they were praying for, the resolution to this issue, was that they knew, the believers of the day that were serious about God knew, if God doesn't come and fix this thing up, it isn't going to get fixed. Now, we're of that understanding today. If Jesus doesn't come and fix this broken world, it's never, ever going to get fixed. And their desire, their prayer was, Lord, that you would come. The people that were serious about God, that feared God, that actually were trying to do what's right and please God with their lives and their hearts, they were calling on God, God, come and fix this mess. And that's why he says in verse 1, behold, I will send my messenger, and he shall prepare the way before me. But the one that you really are looking for, that is the capital L, small O, small R, small D. We know his name today, and his name is Jesus. He's coming. 400 years before, he's on his way. But then something interesting takes place here in these next few verses. He says, and the one you're looking for, the Lord whom you seek, he shall suddenly come to his temple, even the messenger of the covenant, whom ye delight in, behold, he shall come, saith the Lord of hosts. And now we're at this time of the year where we're celebrating his birth into the world about 2,000 years ago. But then he asks a very serious question when he says these words. Verse 2, look closely. But who may abide in the day of his coming? We get awfully relaxed in regards to Jesus Christ, and he is a friend that sticks closer than a brother. And he has called us as friends. We understand that. But we dare not get too lax in regards to this Jesus, who is still the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords. Because while he is our best friend that we ever will have, he's not just another one of our buddies. In fact, the question is this: who's going to be able to stand when this Lord comes on the scenes? In fact, the second question in verse number 2 is, who shall stand when he appears? Well, why is it going to be such an issue? And the answer is because, for he is like a refiner's fire. Want to know what this Lord's going to be like when he comes on the scene? He's going to be like a refiner's fire. Now, the message today, really, when you get to the bottom line of it, is Jesus is either going to be a refiner's fire in your life, or he is going to be a consuming fire, because Hebrews says our God is a consuming fire. And this Lord, when he shows up on the scenes, he'll either refine you or he will one day consume you, meaning that one day you will ultimately end up in the lake of fire forever, as the book of Revelation chapter 14 verse 11 speaks, and the smoke of their torment ascendeth up before the Lord and his holy angels forever and forever and forever. Now that's a bad deal. And he's either going to be a consuming fire if you are not a believer, or if you put your faith in him and trust him as your Lord, he still is going to be a refiner's fire in your life. And any of us that have lived for the Lord and tried to dedicate ourselves to living faithfully for the Lord, we understand that the refiner's fire, sometimes it's hot. He says, who can abide when he comes? Who's going to stand when he appears? For he is like a refiner's fire. He's like a fuller's soap. He's like a clothes detergent that you put in your washing machine with your clothes to get the dirt out. He's going to put the fire to us as believers in the sense of a trial. That's why Peter spoke about the trial of our faith being much more precious than gold or silver that perishes, because Jesus is going to put the fire to us, the trouble in our life, to bring out the purity. I'll talk about that more in a little bit. He's also going to be like a fuller soap, that if you think you can become a believer and you're just going to live your life however you want to live with the complete disregard to the teachings and the words of God, you got something coming, mister. Because you will find that when the Lord enters into your life and he becomes your Lord, that he isn't going to leave you a mess like you used to be before you got saved. And you're going to have to clean up some things, because he will put the soap to you. He'll put the soap to your dirty mouth. My dirty mouth that I used to have before I was a Christian, because I could cuss with the best of them, but not in front of mom and dad, because you got in trouble about that. But get me out on the golf course, get me with a few of my friends, and I could let her fly till Jesus came and he wanted to clean up my potty mouth. He's still working on my mouth. He's still working on my eyes, what I ought to be looking at. He's still washing up my thoughts. He's still washing me when I do wrong things, my behavior. Who can abide when he comes? You think it's going to be a picnic? I mean, he's the best friend you ever have. It's the greatest life. I wouldn't trade it for anything. But if you think he's just going to let you keep being what you used to be before you got saved, you have sorely mistaken the refiner's fire. One old preacher of the past said this: When Jesus shall be manifest in Israel, when he comes to Israel and come preaching the gospel of the kingdom, who could bear the doctrines delivered to by him concerning that he is God in equality with the Father? Who can handle that Jesus, what Jesus said about his character and his mission, that he was the Messiah, and many have said he lied about that? Who can abide when he comes on the scene and he says that he's giving his flesh for the life of the world, and that if you want to be a partaker in him, you got to eat his flesh and drink his blood? That sent a bunch of them scattering away one day. When he came on the scene and he taught about salvation and he said it's going to be by grace through faith, not by you being a good person. And a lot of people reject Jesus Christ when he taught that, and they still do today. The preacher goes on to say, all and all such that so severely struck at the wickedness of the scribes and Pharisees and their self-righteous principles. And I'm telling you, if you come to this church or any church that's preaching the Word of God true, if you're a self-righteous person, you can never handle the preacher getting up and saying, God says you're a horrible sinner that needs to be saved. And if you're a self-righteous person, you will pull back from the doctrines and the teachings of Jesus Christ, and you'll blame it on the preacher, you'll blame it on everybody else, but when you get right down to it, listen, you cannot get to heaven on your own. You are a horrible sinner like the rest of us in this room are, and we all are in need of salvation. And if you don't come through Jesus Christ, you're not going to make it to heaven. How's that sit? And if you're self-righteous, like the Pharisees, many of the Pharisees and scribes were, they recoiled from that. The who do you think you are? And to which Jesus responded, I'm the Lord. I'm the way, the truth, and the life, and no man comes unto the Father but by me. Oh, seriously? You're going to say, Jesus, you're the only way to get to heaven? That you can't get to heaven any other way? That's right. How's that sit? The preacher went on to say, in all their self-righteous principles, and especially since for judgment he came that they might not see, nor could they bear the light of this glorious sun of righteousness, and he came not to send peace on an outward prosperity of the Jews, but he came to send a sword of division. He did. He said, you think I came to bring peace into this world? I came to bring a sword. In another place, he said, I came to send fire. Because when Jesus comes on the scene and he gets in the life and in your heart and he begins to make a change, sometimes we find as believers that our foes, that our biggest enemies are people of our own household. Because he makes such a difference. And he will define and make it clear who's serving God and who's not. And even in this congregation, he'll sort her out. This COVID thing has done some sorting out too. As to the people who really want to serve God and the people who don't. Because if you really didn't want to serve God that much, you just got your excuse that seemed legitimate. And the only people that seem to really be wanting to be in service to God right now are the people that are the real deal. Most of them have been able to gather back in here together. We still have some sitting in the parking lot. But God will sort her out. And if he doesn't sort it out here in our day, he will sort it out at the judgment. He says those Jews, he said, very few indeed could bear his ministry. That is true, isn't it? When we read the Gospels, the religious leaders, who were the people that gave Jesus the most fits? The religious leaders. And I ask myself, if Jesus came down here bodily and was walking around like he did almost 2,000 years ago, would I reject him? Very few indeed, the preacher writes, could bear his ministry or the light of that day, it being so directly contrary to their principles and their practices. And then he says in verse number 3, Matthew chapter 3, verse 3, look closely. He shall sit as a refiner and a purifier of silver. And I love this next part even. And he, where is he going to start? He shall purify the sons of Levi. It's the same ones in chapter number 2, the preachers of the day, that he said, you know, you guys are the issue. It used to be that Levi, he was a man that feared me and he lived for me and he did what's right and he turned many people away from iniquity. But you guys have caused many people to stumble at the law. And when the Christ comes on the scenes, he's going to sit as a refiner's fire and he's going to start, number one, with the preachers, with the priesthood. And you guys are going to get cleaned up first, one way or the other. I'm going to purify you guys. And that's why when he came on the scene, the preachers that weren't the real deal of the day, that priesthood, they recoiled from the teachings of Christ. They tried to kill him, the religious leaders. And he said, I'm going to start with you boys when I show up. Like a fuller soap, a refiner's fire, so that you guys then, verse 3, because that's the bad news, but the good news is that they, that the sons of Levi, may offer unto the Lord an offering in righteousness. So that when you bring something before me, I'll accept it. Because he's like, right now, most all you guys, because of how you are in your hearts and in your lives, when you bring a sacrifice to me, I won't even accept it. Chapter 1. Should I accept this offering at your hand? Now, the convenient thing is that we look at this and we go, well, you know, Old Testament, Jewish people, we know who we are, New Testament Christians. That's true. But I would ask you to turn to the book of 1 Peter for just a moment. The book of 1 Peter, 1 Peter chapter 4. In verse number 17, there's a very interesting statement. And it goes like this. For the time has come that judgment must begin. But he said this judgment is going to begin. It's going to begin where? In the house of what? The house of God. He said the time has come that judgment is going to begin. And it's going to begin in the house of God. And if it first began at us, and it did, and it will, what shall the end be of them that obey not the gospel of God? God's like, I'm going to start in my church. That's where I'm going to start, in the house of God. And that refiner's fire that was prophesied in the book of Malachi, that Lord that they were praying for did come about 2,000 years ago. His name was Jesus Christ. And he wasn't just an issue with the fake hypocrites that hated his guts, that wanted him dead. When he began to really save people, when we saw converts coming to the Christian faith and living for him, God always, when you understand his judgments, when he's going to clean things up, he's going to begin in the house of God. Why? Why would he do that? Because he said stuff like this in the Old Testament. For if my people, which are called by my name, would humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways. If my people, God said, will humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then I will hear from heaven, I will forgive their sins, and I'll heal their land. But it starts with revival, and I constantly seem to have people saying, preacher, when can we have revival? And the question is, when will God's churches get on board with revival? As one old preacher said, the only thing that keeps us from having revival is that we don't want it. See, because if we really wanted revival, we could have revival today, even if it was only on a personal level, because God is going to clean us up. Because he wants us, New Testament believers, because in the New Testament, we are a royal priesthood unto God. And God wants to start with his priesthood and clean us up so that when we show up on Sunday morning and we throw some money in the offering plate, God actually accepts it. When we offer up some praise to God, that he actually accepts our praise because it comes from clean hands and clean lips and from a life that is pleasing to God so that he will accept it. That when we offer our worship unto the Lord, that he would accept it. But for him to be willing to accept it, we got to be clean. Not just cleaner than somebody that lives down the road from you. There's lots of ungodly people. Any of us can look around and find somebody that's more wicked than we are. That's not the standard. Jesus is the standard. And he wants his people to be clean because he knows that revival begins in the church house among his people. And if our country, if our land is ever going to be healed, it's going to come from some people of God that begin to get serious with God, and then God will hear our prayer, forgive our sin, and he'll heal our land.
You've been listening to Here's Hope, a ministry of Bible Baptist Church. Check us out online at hearshope.org. You can contact us by writing to Bible Baptist Church, P.O. Box 487, West Union, Ohio 45693, or by calling us at 937-544-1818. If you don't already attend another church, we'd love for you to give us a try.